Hi there. This is Wilson, Just Wilson, coming to you with a bonus episode, which is my interview with the director Daishi Matsunaga. Matsunaga directed this new film called Egoist that premiered at this year's Hong Kong International Film Festival, which I talked about in my HKIFF review episode, which you can check out. I think it was just the previously released episode. And we talked about his new film and also his previous work, Hanalei Bay. And he gave a lot of insightful answers about this queer film that also meanders down a rabbit hole of grief and shared love and shared grief. It was a really great conversation and my first long-form in-person interview that I've done with a director. And I also just want to shout out my dear friend Fumiko Nago for doing an incredible job helping translate this interview in real time. So that's the voice you'll be hearing answering for Mr. Matsunaga. Thank you so much again, Miko. So, yeah, without further ado, the interview will start after the jump. I'm Wilson Lai. And you're listening to Deep Cut. Perfect. Hey, thank you so much, Mr. Matsunaga, for joining me today for this interview.
Oh, my pleasure.
It's an honor. I watched your film earlier this week and thought it was a really moving portrait of a very intimate relationship and also a very beautiful examination of grief that happens after love.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to start out with, because this is the international premiere of your film, how did you feel like the premiere went and on Sunday? And did you feel happy with the crowd's response and the questions that you got asked after this the movie? Do you think the Hong Kong audience took the film as you intended them to take it?
First of all, I really appreciated the big theaters here with maybe close to 1,000 audience. And I remember the most applause that I received after the film. It was very warm. And I was very, especially moved by the Q&A session. I felt that the audience really committed to watching this film and then try to understand its film, and I was very happy about that.
Ah, that's so great. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it in person to see it, but yeah, I saw it on a screener, and I feel like it was equally as moving. But I want to get into talking about the film itself. So how did this project come to be? I know this was an adaptation of a pretty famous autobiography. How did you choose this project? What drew you to the source material?
Myself getting an offer from a film producer about the production of this film. There was already a first draft script. And when I took a look at the first script, I felt that I do want to rewrite the script with a screenwriter. And that is how the film started going.
So were there any interesting moments or a story theme that drew, like, that made you want to say yes to this project?
So when I first took a look at this draft, I felt that the story was about two male characters, and then it turns to a story about family. Especially in the last scene, the protagonist, Kosuke, tells Yuta's mom that he doesn't know what love is. And Yuta's mom type or responds with, you don't need to know. You don't necessarily need to know about what love is. What matters is what we receive. And I was really moved by these lines, and they were the key to deciding on working with this film.
Oh, that's great. I feel like I got similar senses of loss and contending with love that is lost in your film Hanalei Bay, which is also a adaptation, but that of a Murakami short story. But how did you feel like this process of taking on this work was different to that process of adapting that Murakami short story.
Hanarebe wa short story datta
ので So Hanarebe was based on a collection of short stories. And in adapting this film, there was not many places where there were original lines that were added. So it was basically a direct adaptation. On the other hand, Egoist involved many long monologues. The novel itself was very long, so I had to decide on which monologues that I will use in this film. And I guess that was the biggest struggle of how to shorten this long novel into a short film.
So I'm going to shift gears a little bit and talk about casting. And I thought the chemistry between your two male leads is so incredible and so powerful and so believable. What was the casting process like? Did you know what you wanted immediately before, like when you were looking at the script? Or did that sort of change as you found your two male leads? Oh, and also, yeah, Ryuta's mother as well.
So when I was first working with the scenarios, I did not really think about the casting. It was the producer that brought two actors, Suzuki and Miyazawa, to me. When I first heard of those two names, I thought they were two great actors. And I was hesitant to say yes to that. I thought about it for over maybe 1 week. I always decide on the cast through discussions with the producer. And as I said, I was very hesitant about these two characters. But considering the style of filming, I used a documentary style filming in this film, including close-ups and giving attention to making a real feeling to this film. I thought maybe, yes, I can work with them.
Great.
And
so about the casting of Ryuta's mom, the actress Agawa-san is not a professional actress. She is actually a writer. And I guess my intention there was that I didn't want the audience to have an expectation about what the feels of the film is like through casting. But instead, I wanted them to actually feel the film. I was being creative with this kind of casting.
So do you think for the two male leads who are sort of established in Japan, that audiences will come into watch, like local audiences, Japanese audiences coming in to watch Egoist will have some sort of expectation from the actors that are more well known?
So bringing the two famous established male leads into the forefront was very much intentional, and this was intentional through the PR as well. We sold this as two male protagonists' love story. And things like paying attention to Agawa-san, this female actress, we did not bring this into the forefront when we were doing the PR. We simply sold it as a love story between two characters.
It's very interesting because I was thinking about, like when watching the film, I was thinking about how this sort of straddles the line between sort of BL, like Asian love story content and something that is a little more than that or a little more complex than that. How would you describe the film in relation to all that other content that we have in Asia with gay love stories?
Considering the initial images I had going into this film, was thinking about how to shoot this film. I was thinking about the film Call Me By Your Name, and I would, in my sense, place Call Me By Your Name not in a BL category, but rather more of a queer film. And I wanted this film also to be somewhere close to that.
I think the tenderness of the romance reminded me of the romance in Call Me By Your Name. But I think visually, it's quite different. Your film's very intimate and you had a lot of handheld close-ups. And I know you talked about earlier it being sort of adding to the realism of your film. But I was wondering if there was any other reasons behind why you chose to shoot this film in a specific way, if you had other visual inspirations for this film.
He doesn't know the English title of this film.
The boy, right?
Yes,
yeah, the Darden film. Yeah. Yes.
So I actually shared this film, The Boy, with the staff in the very beginning.
That's great. I feel like the Darden's social realism is very similar to this, and then the melodramatic punches of like Ryuta's mom getting sick or Ryuta's death itself, you can feel in a similar way there's a despair that happens in your film similar to the Dardens. I want to focus in on maybe a couple of important moments that you chose to sort of break the stylistic mold of the film. So the first is that moment when they're in Kosuke's apartment and it cuts to an iPhone footage film of him. And I think that's, well, to me, it really put us in the moment. And I think you did a very similar thing in Hanalei Bay with the flashbacks using, I think it was iPhone footage as well or something like that. But it really felt like very weird because you're like, oh, I'm inside this moment right now. What was your choice to just limit it to just that one shot? And what do you feel like the importance of using that sort of digital iPhone aesthetic in your film?
So in the initial scenarios, we had decided that it was a scene about Yuta using an iPhone to film Kota, but we weren't sure if we were going to use the actual footage from the iPhone. These decisions were basically made on site. So basically, a lot of these decisions were made through discussions on site. This was done in Hanalei Bay as well. The strength of using an iPhone footage is that you're able to capture eye contact of who's being filmed. And in this moment, the eye contact is making a connection with the audience as well. And this gesture of speaking to yourself, speaking to the audience, is very important to me. And this was something I was thinking about filming this scene.
So another moment that I want to talk about is the moment when Ryuta just exits Kosuke's apartment and then gets a phone call that his mom has suffered a fall and she's in the hospital. And in that moment, you chose to track back and then like sort of camp the angle a little bit. I was just very interested to hear about your thought process. Was that decided in the scenario, in the script, or was that decided on the day of like shooting itself?
It was on site. So I actually hadn't, in my previous works, hadn't worked with camera angles or putting in effect through these visuals. And this film is a one scene, one take shoot. And considering that this film is a collection of that, I felt that there can be such scene. And on site, I decided on using these camera effects, portraying the feels of the mind through changing camera angles, this wavering of what the protagonist is seeing.
Yeah, it's really awesome because you sort of go between sort of observational documentary-like footage, but then it suddenly becomes very subjective. Mm-hmm. And I think, that was a really, really great part of your film.
Thank you.
I sort of want to switch again and talk about the intimate, the sex scenes that happen in your film, which are very like realistic and quite like intimate. And it's sort of also very like Call Me By Your Name-esque. But I was wondering how you worked with your actors. I know in a lot of Western films, they have an intimacy coordinator on set that helps them block out the sex scene. So I was wondering if you use that.
In our staff, we had two figures, LGBTQ inclusive director and intimacy choreographer.
I sort of maybe want to talk about the LGBTQ aspect of it, because you sort of see Kosuke with his group of gay friends.
Yes.
And that felt like quite a mirror to reality, the sort of conversations that they were having. But also, I also felt like this was like very limited world of just like gay men. And I was wondering how you built that, and also what your thoughts are about like other figures or other members of the queer community and how they were, like how you chose to just focus on gay men in this film?
まずコウスケの友達のゲイの友達みんな、
コウスケ with his friends, the actors that we used in these scenes are gay actors. They actually have no experience in acting.So there was I had casted them through an interview, and when I was done with the casting, I had decided that I didn't want to guide these scenes. So it wasn't my decision to decide on what kind of scene these dialogues are going to be. For example, in the izakaya scene, I actually let them just go with the flow. I just wanted to film whatever is there amongst them as a community.So I did give them keywords, but that is the only thing I gave. Basically, these scenes were several takes of just free interactions amongst them.
I want to talk now about maybe production design and how both Kosuke's really nice apartment looks very, very different from Ryuta and his mom's space.But you have a really strong connection to both spaces by the end of the film. I know it's probably just like a reflection on their relationship and how they come from different worlds. But I wanted to ask you about the choices of choosing those spaces and how that relates to their character.
たぶんそのリュータの家
の
雰囲気っていうのは、まあそのちょっと生活が貧しくて。
To be a very small apartment.And this scene is very close to the imaginations of Japanese audience. They would know immediately that they probably don't have that much money. And on the other hand, for Kosuke, not only his apartment reflects economic wealth, but we're very conscious of making the set very simple. The intention behind that was that in the last scene, Kosuke eats Ryuta's mom's food. And this is the first time that we have a long shot of...Kosuke's room, and we know that it's very empty and it's very simple. This feeling of isolation of him being alone, we wanted to reinforce that feeling, so we were very conscious of removing things out of Kosuke's room, making it very simple and somewhat isolated.
That's great. I think like similarly.With your costume design, you sort of isolate him as well by having him wear such like beautiful designer, like fancy clothing that makes him look very different from everyone else when he's out about in the streets. And he says in a voiceover early on that he sort of treats his outfit like a shield. And I was wondering what that process was like working with a costume designer to create the wardrobe for Kosuke in particular.
そうですね。もう本当衣装に関しても、
We were very conscious of the costume design. The first thing that we were thinking about was making these clothing stand out. These brands, high brands, are very obvious. And so as he talks about how his clothing is a shield, we wanted to make the costume design so that it gives an impression of chasing away others.
That was very effective. I understood that. I...want to talk about how you have this tendency to maybe to cut to silent sound as you reach an important moment. I think it happens two times in, or I counted two times in this film where it cuts to like a slow motion shot of Kosuke and then later on of Ryuta as the sound just cuts out. What do you think the power of doing that does? Because I think that's a technique that not that many filmmakers...use in dramas, and I want to hear your thoughts about that.
なんか無音の瞬間って
first of all,
使い方はすごい難しいと思うんですけど
using silence is very difficult. On one hand, it has an effect of releasing the audience's attention, so it kind of chases them away. But if you use it effectively, I believe that it catches their attention.So when you watch a film, you use your eyes and ears. And so in a silent scene, you are only left with your eyes to watch the film. And this is a very powerful tool of catching the audience's attention. I believe that it could be a way to get them into the story.
Great. One more question about egoist. It's a sort of a big question, but I want to ask about how you thought about balancing the parts of the film before Ryuta's death and then after Ryuta's death in terms of like progression of the film, because it sort of happens maybe at the end of the second act, and how the film drastically changes in tone after that. What do you say about that balance?
This was a very clear and conscious decision to have to make a change between the scenes before Ryuta's death and after Ryuta's death. We wanted to make the change as clear cut as possible, maybe so much that we might lose the audience.
Was that a fear that you had, or you were very willing to be like, if an audience like loses interest after the death, so be it. You're not the audience for my film.
これは本当に大きなチャレンジではあるんですけど、
This was a big challenge for us to use this style of change.
But this comes from my personal experience of loss and grief, because oftentimes things like death or loss comes very suddenly out of the blue, and often we don't have time or opportunities enough to slow down to feel and reflect upon those emotions. And over time, there are suddenly moments when you embrace this grief. In this film, for example, is the scene with the vending machine where Kosuke actually really feels his loss over Ryuta. And it is a very powerful moment where he eventually, within his everyday life, he feels what he has lost. So I wanted the audience to feel this thin line of feeling what loss and death means.
Yeah, I think I really got that. And as well as the maybe the transference of grief that Kosuke has over his mother, or the addition of the Ryuta's loss to him, it sort of really burdens him afterwards. Yeah, just really beautiful film. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Bonnet.
I have maybe two more questions, last two. So first of all, what's next for you? Do you have a film coming up that you're working on? What ideas are exciting you right now?
そうですね、今。
So I'm currently working on three film projects. One of it is on Japanese traditional festivals. Another one is on legal court cases, so legislature. And the third one is sort of related to this current film as well, but the theme is on embracing death as in person and as an other to this person.
Wow. I'm really looking forward to catching those films when they come up. So our podcast is a podcast that's director-based, and we're called Deep Cut because we like to talk about underseen movies from famous directors or underseen directors themselves. And I was wondering if you had any underseen films that you would recommend or directors that you would recommend to our listeners. No pressure. Can be anyone.
This director has already been at film festivals like the Locarno Festival, but Ninomiya Ryutaro's his film Eda Hamakoto is one suggestion.
Wow, thank you. I would definitely check it out. Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for your time. Arigatou gozaimasu.
And that's it. Thank you so much for listening to my interview with Egoist director Daishi Matsunaga. And if you didn't catch it, the two films that he recommended or talked about in this interview was first the Dardenne brothers' The Sun, released in 2002. And his deep cut pick is Ryutaro Ninomiya's Sweating the Small Stuff, or Eda Hanakoto. And thank you for listening to this episode of Deep Cut. Please rate and review because that helps us keep making the show. And be sure to subscribe to us where you listen to podcasts so you'll know when our next episode drops. Keep up with Deep Cut on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Letterboxd at Deep Cut Pod. join us to talk about movies on our Discord server, to which you'll find links to all of these in our description. And thank you to Justina Yam for our beautiful artwork. And I'm Wilson, and take care. We're looking forward to talking about more movies with you next time.